A yes, no offer is buy now. And a yes, yes offer is you want this or you want that. You want the regular or you want the premium. And what happens now is you've taken them from saying yes and no to should I choose this A or should I choose B?
Welcome back to the Business of Freelancing podcast, where we hope you get better clients, make more money, and live a happier and healthier life freelancing. I'm your host, Brennan Dunn, and today I have part two of my interview with the one and only Sean D'Souza. So if you haven't listened to part one, pause this episode right now, go back to the last episode with Sean, listen to that, and then listen to this, because it's not going to make any sense jumping directly into part two. But if you have already listened to the previous episode, so what ended up happening was I recorded with Sean that first interview, and then a few hours later, we were exchanging emails and we're like, and you know, we were so involved in that first talk that we needed to do it again. We needed to go deeper into this seven bag framework that Sean's developed that covers what are the seven objectives that need to happen prior to there being a successful sale. So in this follow-up interview, we dove deeper into all this. And I just really wanted to figure out as much as I could about from somebody like Sean, who was really instrumental in my own success, in my own understanding of how to write sales copy, how to write copy well. And I really wanted to get his perspective on how to use all those principles that were so foundational for my own businesses and tailor them to people like you, freelancers and consultants. I want to tell you about something that I really like. So, you know, I know firsthand what it's like to deal with getting healthcare, especially when you're self-employed and a freelancer. And before I went to work for myself, I honestly never had to worry about insurance. My employer always covered it for me. But when I did go solo, I had to figure out how to get insurance, which, you know, was pretty tricky when it was just me. And a lot of the plans I found out were tailored for bigger companies than my, you know, solo just Brennan shop. So I ended up hiring a broker and shopping around for a few weeks until I found something that was both affordable and would actually work for my family and I. Hopefully you haven't had a similar experience, but with the way that signing up for health insurance goes, I really honestly wouldn't be surprised if you had. Luckily, Stride Health is changing the game. What they do is they instantly compare every available health plan to help freelancers like you find their perfect match. And they factor in all the prescriptions and favorite doctors and everything else. And you can also sign up for in only 10 minutes or a little less than 10 minutes, actually. And that's about 90 minutes faster than signing up through healthcare.gov. And from what I've been told, they save their members on average about $400 a year on health insurance by helping them pick the right plan. So check out Stride Health at stridehealth.com/double. From there, you can create your free account and find the perfect plan for you and your family. And even if you've had health insurance, create an account and add your plan to get access to all kinds of year-round savings, like prescription discounts and tools that unlock your health plan's free benefits. You'll also get a personal support team for any health insurance questions. So if you're a freelancer or run your own business, head on over to stridehealth.com/double and create your free account. All right, and here's Sean. Hey, Sean. So welcome back to the Business of Freelancing. So last time we talked, about the idea of the seven red bags, and we kind of danced around them, I think. And I wanted to have a follow-up discussion to talk just more in depth. And based on our pre-chat, it sounds like you even have some additional information that you wanted to share and everything. So I'm really excited about our talk today. And again, welcome back to the podcast.
Well, it's always a pleasure to speak to you. You know that.
Yeah. So let's just dive right in. Sound good?
Yep.
Cool. Okay. So the seven red bags, you know, the bags that are kind of essential in order to do what, you know, in the case of us as freelancers and consultants want, which is to get a new client. Could you refresh my memory on what the seven were again?
Well, there are two parts to it. We have the attraction part, and then we have what you'd consider the conversion part. So the first three bags are the problem, the solution, and the target profile. And the second, so these are the attraction bags. When you put them together, people identify themselves, define their problem, and then come up with a solution. And that gets the person engaged. That takes them to the second phase where they start to get a little edgy. And you have the objections, because once you decided, you know, you want to go ahead, you think, well, am I making the right decision? And then you get into risk. So you get into objections, you get into risk reversal, testimonials, and finally uniqueness. Now, uniqueness is not really a risk factor. It is. So when you look at the brain audit, you're actually looking at it in three parts. The first is the attraction. The second is the risk factors. And the third is, why should I buy from you instead of somebody else? And this is especially the case when you're selling a lamp, or you're selling a graphic design service, or you're selling something that seemingly is quite identical or similar to another person's business.
To me, it seems like, you know, the first few bags are focused on letting the visitor, letting the reader know that they're in the right place. You know, basically showing them that, look, you're if I'm saying something that resonates with you, you're at the right webpage. And then the later are focused on kind of helping them see both what to do next, along with why making that next step with you is the best possible option, I guess.
Correct.
Okay.
But the first part is also a curiosity factor kind of thing slipping in it. So it means that you've actually done your homework. When you do that right, because people can do that problem solution, but they can do it really badly. And so that doesn't work. And we can explore why that doesn't work in this episode.
So why don't we just start from the beginning and start from the that initial attraction, that kind of teasing the person, I guess, at kind of, I know early on we don't want to present an offer, we don't want to present a product, we want to just really present a problem, I guess, right? That
correct.
We understand, yes. We know about.
Yes. So essentially the first three bags are the problem, the solution, and target profile. Now, the traditionally people have always presented, whenever you ask them a question, why do you want to buy this something, you know, or what are you selling? They're always giving you the solution. They're always saying, oh, I build websites, or I sell computers, or I design web pages. The problem with that is that it doesn't actually engage the brain at any level. Because unless you have the problem identified, the other person goes, oh, that's nice, how interesting. And it's basically what you're doing is you're killing whatever you're saying. And so what you've got to do is you've got to understand that the brain is really engaged with a problem. If it doesn't have that problem, it just goes to sleep. It's just like information. It's like, you know, it's the difference between a fire truck or a fire engine. What do you call it in the US?
Fire truck, yeah.
Fire truck. Yeah. It's the difference between a fire truck and just traffic on the road. The fire truck gets attention because it signifies a problem. You know, the cop car signifies a problem. So the problem that the mistake that people make is that they start talking about there are two things that they do wrong. The first thing is they start talking about the solution. They go, you know, I fix websites, but what are you fixing about the website? So I can show you in 1 second, you know, how by just tweaking it just a little bit, it gets the other person's attention. So you say most website owners build their websites, but then they get locked out of their own website. And then they have to go back to the developer every time just to make small
changes. And spend more money, waste more time, and so on.
Yeah. But the now we don't have just a website building. We have a website that you can control yourself. But then when we go deeper into this conversation, we find that the customer doesn't use the language of copywriters. The customer uses the website. They use a different language. They say it's like being in a house where half the rooms are locked. And that is why it is critical to go to that third bag, which is the target profile. Because when we sit down and write copy, we write it like the stuff that is in our head and what we imagine the customer would be saying, but that's not how the customer speaks. And that's why when we put that problem on our web page, we don't get the response that we're looking for.
Would it be fair to say, like, you know, the example you gave earlier of the web designer, the freelance web designer who says something like, I design websites. Would it be fair to say that the way I've always looked at it is, if you are a client, right, you're a client and you have decided that you're going to go shop around for web designers because you want a new website. Well, before you got to that point, you came to the realization that you want more customers, or you're jealous of the restaurant down the street that has a brand new beautiful website, and you think it's hurting your image, or you know, there's some underlying issue that is at the root of the website, right? That is at the root of that request. And what I've always thought is that if you're just advertising technical services, you're leaving it up to the client, the buyer, to kind of internalize how your technical service can actually affect their problem. So, you know, the client needs to think, maybe a new website from Sean will get me the new customers I need. Where if you can go and kind of make that connection for them, it's a lot more, you know, it's a lot more powerful, and it also sets you apart, I think.
Yes. So what happens is, on average, a customer has X number of problems. You know, they want more customers, they want not to be locked out of the website. And on average, what the mistake that we make first is that we talk about solutions. You know, we're going to build websites. Well, that's not good enough for me, because I don't understand, you know, if I'm faced with two sales messages, one that says, I build websites, and the other one that says, if you've ever been locked out of your website, it's a real pain. So here's how you get a website that you can manage all by yourself. So I'm going to choose the second one. I don't even care about the first one. So that's the first thing. But the second thing is also the customer's language. And we learned over the years that if we don't use the customer's language, and we just write copy from our own heads, then eventually that becomes less effective. So now if you have three sales pages, the first one says, I fix websites. The second one says, you know, I fix websites, but that website it helps you not to have to go to the developer. And the third one, where the customer says, having a website, having my earlier website seemed like I was locked out of my own house, or half the rooms in my own house. What is happening now? We've got three sales messages, but the third one is striking me more than anything else, because I feel like that and I speak like that. And copywriters don't write like that. Customers speak like that. And so when you compare three separate messages that are essentially saying the same thing, but are created differently, that takes us to that whole third bag, which is the target profile. And when we do that questioning, a target profile really is different from the what we call a persona. You know, people have all these terms, but I just look at it as, I'm speaking to you right now, and I'm going to ask you your problem. And it's just one customer. So that one customer comes up, and you want to take a good customer, someone you think, you know, who's worked with you before and has had the problem, and you solve that problem, or someone who you think is a really good customer in the future, a good prospect. And when you speak to them, you say, you know, what real problem do you have here? They start to use language that, if you use almost verbatim, is what becomes the, you know, option one, option two, and option three. The option three, those words become the most powerful tool of all.
It reminds me so much of, I don't know if you follow Joanna Wiebe at all of Copy Hackers, but she gave an example of a client of hers who was a rehabilitation center, and, you know, for mental health, right? And they had just a generic kind of web designer build their website, and it wasn't really speaking to anybody. I mean, that was the issue that they found, because they weren't getting many leads through their website. And then when they hired Joanna, she actually went to Amazon and looked up reviews for mental health books and looked at the problems people were, like, in their own language that they were saying. I forgot the example that she gave of the winning headline. But basically, she just threw back the wording that, you know, that people who fit that target profile have said, like, in their own words, back at them. And she said it was night and day, you know, in terms of results.
Of course it is. It is night and day when you just look at it. You don't even have to have results. You don't have to have customers coming to your site. You can just have them side by side on your own page and you go, you know, I prefer this one more than the first one or the second one. So you don't even have to go out to customers. The reason for that is that we are unable to write in customer language. Even if you're a very good copywriter, even if you're really good at stuff, because customers have, you know, like for instance, at one point in time, we were selling a website masterclass. Now, this was showing customers how to build a website like a religion. You know, it's, you don't just build a website, just a website, but you build a business that could technically last for 20 years, 50 years, 100 years, 200 years. And it was based on religions, which is the fact that they've lasted over 2,000 years. How have they constructed? What is the structure? But, you know, that's not what the customer is buying. So I'm selling all this stuff. I'm talking about all this jazz. They're interested in it, but that's not what they're buying. And so I do this interview with Mark, and Mark says to me, he says, it's fine for you, Sean. You have tens of thousands of customers. I have only 500 customers. How do I build a website? How do I build a business with just 500 customers using your website techniques? That's what I put as a headline.
Right, which immediately then, I mean, you're talking to the who you're selling to, which is the small business owner. You know, they're not probably building a website is not their core competency, but they know they need one. You know, it's a part of their business. I want to try to get in the minds of, you know, the average listener. Let's say they're a freelance designer, freelance programmer. They might have a dozen clients, you know, a dozen clients that they've worked with over the last few years, or maybe a little more. But what would be a good way to kind of get that raw language? I mean, one of the things that I'm a big fan of is, and I got this actually from Amy Hoy, is the idea that instead of cornering somebody and saying, answer this question, kind of go into their natural habitat, go on forums, go on message boards, go on Amazon reviews, whatever it might be, and look for things that they're saying kind of unprompted, right? So in my mind, that could be maybe it's look at emails that you've had with prospective clients, you know, look at the words that they were using, look at the objections they had, look at the pains that they were telling you, you know, in these initial emails, in these initial meetings. And I mean, what do you think in terms of like kind of coming up with that for kind of the typical freelancer?
Well, Amy Hoy is a client of ours, by the way. She's done courses with us, so it's not unusual. I'm sure she's very successful on her own right, but just so you know. But besides that, to answer your question, you will have every business has 6-8 different types of clients. And the second problem, which is what I was getting to, is that what we try and we try to appeal to all of them. So we're going, okay, you know, I have a pizza. I'm going to sell a pizza. I'm going to sell it to retired people, to people who like spicy food, to this people and that people and that people, and for parties and for this and this. You put all those problems on a page, and you see this on many sales pages or even in you know, presentations and stuff. They will list 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, hoping that you will pick one of them. And that's not how it works. So when you go to what Amy said, which is you go to, say, Amazon, and you see this pain out there, and you put it on that page, what you need to do is you need to then drive home that pain. How does that pain unfold? This is what we call consequences. So it's not just bringing up the problem, but bringing up the consequences of not dealing with that problem. So when I go to the car mechanic and he says, you know, there's nothing wrong with your tire right now, but if you neglect this, this is what could happen on the motorway, on the freeway. Now I'm getting a picture of something that I didn't know was the problem in the first place. When I'm building a website, I'm not thinking of being locked out of my website. When I'm building a website, I'm not thinking that it won't be responsive or it won't do this or it won't do that. I'm just thinking of the top level. And the people who express the pain are people who have dealt with that problem before. And so what you're doing is you're taking their experiences and then expressing it on your web page. And the person who reads it goes, goodness, I didn't think of that. I don't want to get into that trouble. And so you have that problem and then the consequences. You want to drive home those consequences and then bring up a solution, because the way a problem works is it increases the heart rate. And if you keep that heart rate going on for too long, it kind of dissipates. It's a bit like how we have this global warming debate. Even if someone feels that, you know, they are causing too much pollution or they're doing something, after a while, because the problem is so big, they don't know what to do. So when you bring that problem, you want to bring up a solution as well. And then from there on, say you solve another problem and a third problem. Essentially, you can bring up those problems and bring up the consequences, but eventually all of the rest of it needs to go into bullet points. You can't bring up 8 problems because a customer is just going to get overwhelmed with them. It's better to bring up one problem, drive home the consequences, bring up the solution, and tell them how they can get to that solution. And then if you've got other problems that you solve, put them in the bullet points, put them elsewhere, but don't try and solve all of them together.
I think you actually answered my next question, which was, I think we also talked about this last time. The big pushback that I've heard from a lot of freelancers is, well, if I focus on one problem, like take the I don't want to be locked out of my website example. Well, that would resonate well with people who have been locked out by a previous web designer. You know, they got a website built, bunch of static pages, no content management system whatsoever, and they're kind of jaded based on that experience. So you addressing that fixes that, right? But at first I was thinking, well, what about somebody who has never had somebody build them a website before? This isn't really a problem. Maybe I've had a lot of clients who this was their first time doing anything like this, and they didn't know that there wouldn't be a point and click editor that's shipped by default with every website, you know, that's ever built. So are you saying then that by really highlighting and listing through those consequences, you're basically, even if somebody who's reading has not actually experienced the main pain, you know, the being locked out pain, by displaying those consequences, you're basically giving them a taste of what could happen were they to go with somebody who isn't you or something like that.
Exactly. I mean, and let's not just talk about it. Let's prove this. Do you have a standing desk? Do you in a desk where you can stand up and write?
I used to, but then I got a new desk. So it's something I've been wanting to fix, but I don't at the moment.
Okay. So now you've got a desk. You used to have a standing desk. Do you have any idea that you want to buy a standing desk in the future?
Yeah. So the issue right now is I have a really nice handmade wooden desk, and all the standing desks I've ever seen have looked very, something you would see in a cubicle, you know, very, industrial, and this is more ornate. So that's been my big issue. And why I've been sacrificing my health for aesthetics, I guess.
and if I said to you that you don't have to get rid of your ornate desk, but you could have a standing desk on top of your ornate desk.
If it would still look good, I'd be all over that, yes.
So now what we're looking at is this whole issue. So you're saying, you know, I've got this really great desk that I don't want to get rid of, but I don't want to endanger my health as well. So you're talking about what we're considering impossible, right?
That's right, yep.
Right. And it's possible. There is a company that does this. There is a company that you can take your ornate desk and you can take that standing desk and move it like into the next room if you want tomorrow or in the next 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. You can have your ornate desk back in 5 minutes if you wanted to. So now you're starting to think, what is this? How can I get it? Right? Because the problem is not the standing desk. The problem is the desk. So that's the problem I had last week. Last week I already had a desk. It's a huge desk. There's all the stuff on it. I don't want to move anything. And these guys solved my problem by saying, you don't have to fit anything. This goes on top of whatever desk you have. And immediately, and it's got like, you know, different positions. So it's got 18 different positions. I ordered it and I'm using it and I'm standing up every day.
So you don't need to throw out your old desk. Instead, it's just sitting on top of your existing desk and it lifts up your monitor or whatever else.
Exactly. And this has probably come from someone's idea, which is how do I get a desk that I don't have to throw away my existing desk?
Right.
So you want your own desk? It's there. You've got your standing desk. It's there too.
And it's a great, because if you, you know, it's a great example that you just gave, because if I were to go and stumble upon, let's say, an Amazon listing for a, a one push top on, you know, on top of desk platform lift thing, you know, whatever, right? And they weren't actually talking about the problem that you actually just talked about, which is the, I don't want to get rid of the desk I have. I don't want to deal with moving stuff around. I don't want to drag desks in and out, depending on if I want to, we all know with wires and papers, it wouldn't work. And the fact that it sounds like the way they sold you was just talking about, you don't need to, you know, they're addressing that concern, that pain of, I just want things to stay like they are now, but I want the added health benefits that come with standing more.
Exactly. That was the only point they drove home. And then after that, everything they put in the bullet points, that it has 18 different positions. It has a money back guarantee. You can take it for 30 days. You can try it. You don't like it, you can ship it back. All that stuff was very interesting, but it was only once I got past the initial thing. The initial problem was, what am I going to do with my existing desk? I'm not going to take off all the nuts and bolts, put it on, you know, we have like eBay or something like that. I can't sell anything. I don't have time to sell anything. So I know what happens to my desk, my existing desk. It goes in a corner and then it clutters up the corner. So I would rather keep that existing desk. And that's the whole point. The point is that when you might find that only me, Sean, is interested in it, but then there are 1,000 of me or 10,000 of me. And when you drive home that one point, now you are speaking to me in a way that you cannot speak to me if you're just going to say, here's a standing desk. It solves your health problems.
Right. Do you think it makes sense, before we get into further down kind of the bag list, does it make sense for the typical, let's say, freelancer or consultant to have maybe multiple sales pages, multiple web pages that all kind of focus on a different kind of potential problem, or would it be better just to have one? Because I know you gave that example in your book of the allergy clinic, and where, you know, they were so neutral that they weren't getting the results. But once they focused on that one allergy, I think you said it really obviously affected people who suffered from that allergy. It really increased their conversion rates, but didn't it have an effect across the board too?
See, there are two ways to answer this question. The first thing is that people are very smart. They work out the options. So if I give you a pizza, it's not like I have to solve the problem of the pizza. Even if you say, supposing the problem is like Domino's pizza, it was about speed. Well, I can still figure out that I can have a pizza, you know, the applications for the pizza. I can have it for a party. I can have it for lunch. I can have it for dinner. All that stuff, people are very good at figuring out anyway. So if you just give them the problem, they can figure out how to apply whatever you're selling to their own needs. That's one thing. The second thing, which is more pertinent to your question, is that should I have multiple pages? And the answer is, yes, you can have multiple pages. Yes, you can, you know, back just 15 years ago, if you wanted to print a brochure or leaflet, you had to do 1,000 of them. Today, you can do just one, or you can do just 10, and everyone can be totally different. But here's my suggestion. My suggestion is to go for one first, to go for the client that you really want and the problems that they bring up. Because when I changed that website page, you know, about the website masterclass, well, before that, we weren't selling that many seats. And the moment I changed it, people go, that's me. So really what you're looking for is the that's me situation. And then, you know, if you decide, hey, all of these people already signed up, but I think there is a second segment, well, go for it. But the chances are that you will never need another segment, another page, because you'll be so busy working with one because you're always tweaking and always refining based on what the customer is saying, based on what their objections are, based on how they perceive your uniqueness. So we've had, for instance, the Brain Audit, which is our book, and we've had that page up for, I don't know, almost close to 13 years now. And yes, we can improve the graphics on the page. Yes, we can. So we can do a lot of tweaking on that page and without changing anything in terms of headline or the biggest problem, customers buy it. And yes, you can do it, but do you have the time to go on tweaking 20 pages?
Right, right. I think it's funny, you know, I think usually the root of that problem, the reason that people want to diversify, want to have... you know, I've heard people say, well, you know, I've had medical clinics as clients. I've had law firms as clients. They use different languages. You know, medical clinics use the word patient. Law firms use the word clients. You know, you're going to be talking to a different need with each of them, let's say. And again, this is for more of a vertical industry niche type thing. I've oftentimes you'll hear people say, well, the issue is if I niche too heavily, if I am speaking just to one person with a problem, right? That yes is shared, but it's a very specific problem. Won't I get tired of doing that again? And you know, I like a lot of people like being kind of general purpose freelancers. Is that, you know, the client they're working on today might be a pizzeria, and the client they're working on tomorrow might be a major hospital. And you know, the needs are different. The excitement is different because it's a different kind of, you know what I mean?
Yes, I do. When you speak to a client, though, they don't necessarily use specific terms that are related to that business. So that problem can be solved differently. I'll talk to you about that in the testimonials. But that problem can be solved completely in a different way, where if you want to say you're a graphic designer and you then want to work with, say, I don't know, hospitals and deodorant companies and wine companies. Well, that can be solved very easily with testimonials. When you have testimonials that come from a wine company, a brush company, a lamp company, people look at that and they go, oh, this is a lamp company. I'm a lamp company. That makes sense. But at the very root of it, they want to know if you even understand their problem. And their problem is generic, as in generic to them, as in... I'm getting a lot of customers to my website, but my bounce rate is enormous. So not enough people are opting in. That's totally different from I will build a website for you where you get more customers. So what you're actually saying is, now, does this bounce rate appeal to a deodorant company? Of course. Brush company? Yes. Lamp company? Yes. Computer company? Yes. So, but it's used in the terminology or the terms that a customer would use, which is, I'm getting this bounce rate on my website and it's so well designed. Mm-hmm. Why is this happening to me?
Right.
Right. And so then the testimonials can do the job.
Okay. So the pain could be something like you just said about, you know, I've built a beautiful site, but it's not converting. You know, that could be the pain. And then in the testimonials, right,
But see, this is the whole point. What we're doing is we're using our terms. We're saying it's not converting.
Right.
But the customer uses, I don't know why they do this, but they use terms that have nothing to do with conversion.
Right. So, you know, I have a beautiful website, but I was going to say bounce rate, but again, I've never had a client who've ever known exactly what a bounce rate is. but it could be, you know, it could be something as simple as, why aren't I getting more customers? Or, you right. know, or something they, baseline
they
no, like that.
Yeah. They say no one fills in the form completely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And that I can understand. It's like, why don't they fill in the form? You know? Because if they don't fill in the form, I know what comes. And this is where you drive home the thing. So why aren't they filling the form? Where are they stopping in the form? Or do they even get to the form?
Right.
You know, how do you build a website where a customer gets in and fills the form so that they can notify you so that you can get in touch with them? Now we're talking about stuff. We're not talking about bounce rate and conversion and all this jazz that we think up.
Yeah. And to be honest, that's what you're ending up selling, right? You're selling a website whose only purpose is to get more people to fill out the form.
Like if you go and see the Brain Audit, it says, you know, do you have customers who back away the last minute? This came from a customer. They're like, I don't understand. Why did they don't say conversion.
Right.
They say, I'm about to, I've given them all the information. I've done all the stuff, right? They're all nodding their heads and asking me questions, and then they decide not to buy.
Right. Right.
So it's their terms.
Right. And it's, I think it would be important to make note here too, that if your target profile is a chief marketing officer at a Fortune 500 company, then you may want to use terms like that, right? I mean, it all depends on who they are and the language they use.
And the problem then eventually, I mean, all of these bags are connected to one conveyor belt, which is what we describe in the brain audit. And they're all connected. So the objections are connected to the testimonials. And the problem is connected to the testimonials, uniqueness. And they're all connected in their own way because they're still coming out of that one flight. And you're still taking them off from that one carousel when you land at the airport, which is the, I think we discussed this in the last podcast, but so the when they detect that problem, say it's the CEO of a company, he's definitely or she is definitely going to be scrolling down, skimming, doing whatever he does or she does, and then looking for other CEOs. Mm-hmm. And that's where the testimonials come in.
So let's talk about testimonials, because I think that there's a huge issue with crappy testimonials, and where the average testimonial is something like, Sean was fun to work with, or, you know, something like that, right? And I've always thought that it's due to, if you, like, one of the things I do nowadays is I don't even really, you know, I try to quantify as much data as I can about what kind of results that I delivered for a client, and then I'll basically ghostwrite a testimonial and get them to sign off on it. Because oftentimes left to their own devices, I found that if you just ask a random client you worked with in the past, could I get a testimonial from you? And it's vague like that, you're going to get the Sean was fun to work with. But instead, if you can ask them, can you tell me how working together has benefited your business or something like that, then you're starting to get more testimonials that actually say something. I know you have a whole, I believe, a course on testimonials. What are some things that we should know about getting great testimonials for our websites?
Okay, so the first thing to understand, and it's there in the brain audit, is that you have to have reverse testimonials. We've called this reverse testimonials because they're not sugary. They're not, you know, you were fun to work with. It actually shows how a customer enters your business, which is that, I had to drive 100 kilometers to attend your workshop. I had a young son and I was not keen to leave him behind. But when I got to the workshop, it was worth that drive. Now, what this does is actually it does two things. First, it gets into the mindset of the customer, which is what were they thinking before they got to your workshop? What were they thinking before they bought into your service? Because the other customer that's reading the testimonial, they're thinking of something similar. So that's the first thing. But the second thing that a testimonial like this does is it creates contrast. Now, if you look at great paintings or you look at great music, what you have is contrast. Music is fast and then it's slow. Paintings are, you know, red goes right alongside black. Why? Because it makes the red redder and the black blacker. And it's the same thing with testimonials. What you're really looking at is contrast. It creates a roller coaster. This was not working my favor, and this is what I found. It's a before and after.
It's a case study, right? I mean, it's a micro case study.
Exactly. It's and what it does is, it first of all, when done right, and when you ask those six questions, which if your listeners want, they can, you know, email me and we can give them the six questions. Or I can set up something so that you can do that. But when you ask those six questions, you get 1,000 words of testimonial. And when a customer, you don't have to put the 1,000 words on your page, you can put an excerpt and then link to the rest of the 1,000 words. But when a customer reads that, they're now not reading a testimonial, they're reading an experience. And then it's a completely different situation, because now you're getting the nuances of, what did I go through before I bought the standing desk? What was I thinking? After I bought it, what was I thinking? What do I find now? And what have been the benefits of this standing? And right now, I'm telling you a story. I'm your friend pitching to another friend. You know, go to this movie because of blah, 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 blah. But I didn't want to go to this movie. Who wants to go for Frozen? I mean, I've heard that song a million times. But when I went for, it's like when I went for Frozen, that one stupid song, Let It Go, it stopped me from going to the psychologist anymore because I just let it go. And now I'm a free person. It's just, you know, that's what you tell a friend.
Yeah. 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 No, you know, it's, yeah, as a dad of two little girls, that song, whew. But in terms of testimonials, you know, I think of like, look at the I don't know if you have them in New Zealand, but the commercials for like diet programs, right? I mean, they're not, this food was delicious, or they're not, this food was, this covered all my macronutrients or anything, you know, that's not the kind of testimonials you hear. Instead, you're hearing about a guy who was overweight and miserable and depressed. And then this came along and now he's fit and they're showing images of maybe him and, you know, some good looking girl or something out on a date. You know, I mean, obviously most of us aren't doing that kind of product or don't have a product like that. But I think what needs to happen is like you just said, there needs to be that story. And I think there needs to be before this is the state my business in this case was in. And after this is where I am now, ideally, you know, one thing I always like try to get is companies usually aren't going to be open and letting you advertise that you helped them make $100,000 or something like that. But if you can show something like, as a result of working with Brennan for a few weeks, we were able to redo the way that our customers interacted with our website. And now we're getting 20% more sales per month or something like that. Which yes. That shows an investment, right? I mean, that's basically when you're selling a B2B product, the reason businesses buy, usually it's either one of two things. It's to make more money or to lose less money. So both of which add more profit. So I was just going to, you know, I'm a big fan of like these needed, the testimonials you use. Like if you go to any of my products on my site, all the testimonials, my build a consultancy masterclass, which is just for people who want to grow an agency or grow a team for client work. All the testimonials are almost always people who are saying I got a 10x return within a few months. So there's that time constraint. There's the what the payoff was. And there's that story also within the testimonial.
Yes. And here's the very important point, because as you were relating the testimonial, everyone talks about before and after. But if you've ever read Joseph Campbell's Hero's Journey, yep, you'll notice there is a very, very critical part that a lot of people miss. And that is that there is a before and there is an after, but there is a reluctance.
The during, right? Oh, okay.
There is a reluctance. Mm-hmm. The hero doesn't want to be the hero. When I don't want to buy another desk, I don't want to have a baby. There is a reluctance because of all that in between stuff that I have to do to get to the end point. So I don't want to sign up to another workshop. I don't want to. If I could get that magically, I would go there from A to B. I really want to go from before and after. What the testimonial does and what it should do when it's done, when it's executed correctly, is show the reluctance. Without the reluctance, what we have is a before and after.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the reluctance is, you know, it's like a guy goes into town, you know, he is a ex-sheriff and now, you know, in this cowboy, in these Western movies, and now he's thrown his guns down. He doesn't want to shoot anymore. He doesn't want to kill anymore. And then he falls in love with this person. And then she gets kidnapped. But before that, he doesn't want to do anything. So there's a huge reluctance, but now he has no choice. And that reluctance, you know, I didn't want to go to this workshop. I didn't want to drive 100 kilometers. I didn't want to leave my son behind. That is a huge reluctance. That's not a before or after. That's, I don't want to do this.
I didn't want to deal with possibly losing my desk, right?
Like, yes, just like your clients are feeling right now. They're listening to this thing and they're going, I don't really want to put that problem in my headline. I don't want to restrict it to one person. Mm-hmm. There's this huge reluctance. It's like, give me the after. The before is my website right now with my clients right now. The after is I'm going to get a lot of clients. What was the reluctance? And that is a huge part that people miss out.
And that reluctance is formally treated also when we overcome objections outside the testimonial, correct? Like, I mean,
it is, but
in, or is it that separate?
So the testimonial and the objections are two sides of the same coin. So people say, you know, I'm not sure that I really want to put the problem on my sales page. I don't want to put just one problem. And the testimonial says, well, I didn't want to put one problem on my sales page, but this is what I did, and here's how it rolled out. So they're actually flip sides of the same thing, same coin. However, the objections are written by you, the copywriter, the owner of the company. The testimonials are written by somebody else. So they use their own language, their own tone, their own, you know, there's all of this stuff that you can never dream up, imagine, nothing. You can't do it. And testimonials, in Secret Life of Testimonials, which is a separate book, we talk about the photograph and how the photograph of the client makes a difference, how their tone makes a difference, how their the terms they use make a difference. It's all there. And if you want to get bad clients, you use testimonials of bad clients. And testimonials are like mirrors. So when a client reads that, they go, this is me, or this is not me.
Mm-hmm. Right. So they complement each other. I mean, the objections would be things that, I mean, ultimately, good objections actually do come from client correspondence or correspondence from somebody before they buy. You know, most of the objections I have on my page, or the way that I overcome them, are emails that I've received from people. Hey, what's your, it sounds like this is for these type of people, but I'm this type of person. And granted, a testimonial, good testimonials can help reinforce that. But, a lot of my the objections I've had to overcome have been things that are ultimately things that are, you know, I didn't come up with them in a vacuum. They're direct objections that people have told me that have made them hesitate to enroll or to buy.
Yes. So they have that reluctance. Mm-hmm. They have, but the way they, what clients will do when they're speaking to you or they're emailing you, they'll go, I have no time to come to this workshop. But essentially what they're saying is, give me the reason to come to this workshop. And in the middle of all that is this reluctance, that 100-kilometer drive, leaving the kid behind. So what doesn't come out in the objection, what doesn't come out in the email to you, is, I'm not going to tell you my personal problems. I'm not going to tell you my work problems. I'm going to, but once I experience happiness, once I experience the result, I'm going to put all that in the testimonial. And you, as the prospect reading that, go, that's me.
You're making me want to go and revisit all of my testimonials. A lot of them are good, but you know, it's funny, like a lot of, the biggest objection I'll get is, I've gotten a lot of, feedback from people now that my audience has kind of expanded, where, you know, I'm by training a web developer, and a lot of the early testimonials I had on some of my product pages were from other people like me. And, you know, that's not a bad thing, but the product is also useful for designers or marketers or, any other kind of service providers. And, you know, I haven't, one of my explicit objections that I address is, I'm a freelance X. You seem to be a freelance web developer. Is this for me? But I'm thinking if I diversified my testimonials and got the designers, got the marketers and everyone else contributing, then I could probably just delete that.
Yes. Yeah. The thing is that, you know, you can only put so much in the objections. You can only put so much in the bullet points. You can only, so all of these things are playing their own little role in a different way. They're really just, if you were to boil down all purchases to one word, it would be risk. It would, you know, if you could buy something and be sure that it would work and there would be no downside to it, you would buy it in a flash. But the reason why we're going through these seven red bags is because we have to figure out, is this for us? Am I the right audience? Am I the right person? Not audience, right person. Does it solve my problem? How does it bring a solution? You know, what are these issues that I have? Who else has used it? So this whole sequence is going through our head at high speed. And the reason why we don't buy it is because the information is not provided to us in that sequence. And when it's not provided in that sequence or not provided in a complete format, as it were, you know, the testimonials are inadequate or they're just sugary, then somehow we are unable to make that decision unless it's an urgent thing. So if it's an urgent thing, you've got a, you know, a roof that needs fixing and it's raining and there's going to be a thunderstorm next week, well, now I'm going to go through it very quickly. Now speed is on my side. But even as I'm looking through 6-8 different roofing sites, I want them to say, look, you know, this is what we are, which is completely different. So that bag, that uniqueness bag, you know, say all of them do the same thing. They solve the same problem. They bring the same solution. They answer all the objections. They have all the right testimonials. They have all everything going for them. There's still the factor of why should I choose you? And if we don't have all these elements, well, it is work, but if we don't have the elements, then it's far more difficult for the client to make a decision. And then the client makes a decision based on either speed or something else. And if they don't have that urgency, then they will decide on the basis of price. And this is why you will get one guy that will charge, you know, like we'll charge $3,000 for an article writing workshop, and another guy will charge $200. Is ours, you know, that much better? The point is that the customers look at the uniqueness. After all is said and done, they're going to look at the uniqueness. What, is this a waste of my time or is it a good use of my time? Waste of my money, good use of my money. And what makes you so different that I'm going to pay you $2,500 or $3,000 more?
Right. So it's really that, it's the culmination of all the other six bags, it sounds like, at least. It ties it all together.
Well, it actually, in a way, it's almost crazy, but it stands alone. I mean, that's what uniqueness is supposed to do. It's supposed to stand alone. It's what makes you different.
But it permeates into everything, though, right? I mean, into the pain and the, you know, when, or even early on. I mean, it's, would you say that it's a part of that, or?
It is linked, no doubt, but it sets it up. It's almost like, you know, a Broadway musical where everyone's singing and then the spotlight goes on this lead star and, you know, that's the lead star. And now that guy has to deliver. Otherwise, I can just go to the other guys back again. So if, look at it this way, say you're selling a Mac, you know, and you can get a Mac anywhere, or you're selling an iPhone, or you're selling a brush, and you can get the exact brush anywhere. Well, as it happens, in Auckland, which is where I live, there are bed stores. There are franchised bed stores, which means that you can go online and look at the price of the bed. And there is one bed store in one part of town that sells the bed for $300 to $500 more than the next bed store. Exact bed. You can find the prices online. All of that jazz. Why do they go there? Because at the end of the day, I'm going to buy a $5,000 bed. And if I get the wrong salesman and the wrong advice, I have to sleep on that bed for the next 10 years.
Right.
It's worth my $500.
So there's like a consulting element.
Possibly.
It reminds me of, have you seen, what is it? There's, you know, those exit modals, those big pop-ups that come up sometimes when you're on a website. There is a company called, the name's slipping on me, but they charge something like $5,000 for that plugin, right? And you can go to the WordPress plugin directory or any number of different websites and find either free or cheap, like sub-$100 things that basically do the same thing. The same pop-up comes up, same everything else. The way they're set apart, their uniqueness is it includes, we're going to look at your offer. We're going to help you figure out what labels to put in. You know, everything else will give you the placeholder lorem ipsums to put in your own headline, your own copy, you know, for the button and everything else. But we have data and we have expert writers on staff who will look at your offer, look at your pitch and help you come up with your, you know, so it's more like a, you know, it's product. It's a plugin, but it's also a service. And because I've seen a lot of people who are like, why would you pay $5,000 for that when you can get it for free? And I think to me, that's at least a good example of that uniqueness in practice?
Well, when you look around you, you know, everything that you can buy for $50, you can buy for $5,000. And the point is that you're as a client, you're always looking for, when you don't have any money, you expect that someone like that would never buy anything at a high price. So let's say when we started out in marketing, you know, I wasn't earning anything. I was actually a cartoonist, so I wasn't even earning anything from I was earning from cartooning, but not from marketing. And then I ran into Jay Abraham, and Jay Abraham was charging $25,000 for his workshops, and he was charging $5,000 for an hour of consultation. And then he had a guy who used to work with him, and that guy was charging $500. Now, at $500 an hour, it's quite a lot of money for someone that is earning $0 an hour. And you would think, well, this person is not going to spend. Of course I'm going to spend, because I am going to work out what makes this guy earn $5,000 an hour. And when I spend that money, I didn't spend on Jay himself. I ended up buying about $30,000 worth of products from Jay in probably a year and a half. And this is when I was earning nothing. And I've seen this time and time again. We talk about, you know, this point of how people don't buy when they can't afford it and stuff. But the people who are interested in getting from before to after at a very quick pace,
we'll do that.
And yeah, we'll do that.
It's the shortcut, right? I mean, it's the, you could go the free route and take, you know, one of my favorite things is a lot of people say, well, you know, you can get all this information for free on the internet. Say that to a CEO who is writing a payroll check to one of their employees. They don't want to put it in the memo field of the payroll check, you know, reading free information on the internet for the last 2 weeks, right? I mean, it's a matter of, you know, it's the, do you take the long road, or do you take the shortcut? And the shortcut, you know, in my mind, the quicker that shortcut, the more premium it is oftentimes.
Yes. And you know, the advice I got was, had nothing to do with, I was conducting a workshop for the first time in the US. And the advice I got was to have this documentation. And he said, if you don't have, he said to me, this guy who was working with Jay, and he said, if you don't have this documentation, anyone can stand up and say, I want $10,000. I want $20,000. And here's the story. Here's what happened to Jay and me. One of his friends stood up, walked into the mic because Jay called him, and he spoke into the mic. And then later on, we sold our home studies and stuff. And then we got an invoice from this guy saying, I spoke at your event. Here's my $20,000 invoice. And Jay turned to him and said, Carl, you're going to pay this bill because you didn't have this documentation. And so we've had our documentation at every workshop, and we've never had to pay anyone damages.
Wow. Yeah, no, I haven't done anything like that.
Well, it only takes one crazy...
One person, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't take a lot.
That's crazy.
And maybe you don't pay. Maybe you just get into some sort of litigation. Maybe you just go through 2 weeks of stress. But is it worth that money?
Right.
So that's the kind of problem that you're bringing up. Something that people don't even fathom, don't understand, but someone has gone through it. And when you bring it up, they go, yes, I can see myself in that pit. I can see that myself in that situation.
Right. How does the call to action fit into all of this? So structurally, in my mind, things are more or less procedural, where we start with the pain, we then move on to the problem, you know, and work our way down, I guess, the sales page. As a consultant, where I guess what you're looking for is offering a free consultation, or a lot of the times what I recommend is having something that is, because the jump from zero to tens of thousands of dollars is a pretty big jump. So I always recommend that people try to come up with either like a paid strategy session, or something that just establishes the person is now a customer or a client. But in terms of, let's say somebody wants to jump from somebody going, reading my sales page, this is resonating with them. They are that customer who doesn't want to be locked out of their website as a house, right? Like, they want control over things. What's the offer? Like, what's that? What are we saying to them? What's the call to action going to look like?
So the way we work on our website, so it depends on where you are on the website. So if you're on a sales page, it's different from a home page. It's different from another page. So if you're on a home page, then essentially I want you to either go and read some other articles before you sign up, or I want you to sign up to the newsletter. If you're on an article page, I might want you to get a report and then say, I've written an article on pricing, and now there's this report on which further goes into sequential pricing and shows you how to work it. And so to get that report, you have to opt in. If you're on a page where I'm selling a $20 product, then it might just say buy now. The point, and this is the most critical thing, is once you're getting someone to kind of buy something, you never offer them a yes-no offer. A yes-no offer is buy now. And a yes-yes offer is you want this or you want that. You want the regular or you want the premium. And what happens now is you've taken them from saying yes and no to, should I choose this A or should I choose B?
Right. Do I pay Sean X or do I pay Sean 2X instead of do I pay Sean at all?
Yes, because within the yes, yes, you are creating problems itself. So you're saying for the regular, you're going to get a coffee, and for the premium, you're going to get a coffee and a muffin. And now what has happened is that the customer is no longer focused on the coffee. They've gone straight to the muffin. They're like, what kind of muffin? What do I get? What kind of muffin? How many calories? Now the whole, that additional bit has become the spotlight. It's gone away from the coffee. So what has happened right until now is the spotlight has been on the product or service. And when you have the yes and yes, which we've outlined in this book called Dartboard Pricing, and you've shifted the focus from the product to the bonus, and now they have to have the bonus. So how do you structure that bonus? What constitutes a bonus? All that kind of stuff is what you've got to do, so that eventually they feel so much pain that they will not buy your product if you remove that bonus. They will not buy your service if you remove that bonus. So the bonus then, it switches from this core product or service to this one little thing that you're giving away. And I've done this when we spoke at Denver recently. There were 500 people in the audience. So we get a chance to prove this. And I'm going, okay, you're going to get a Mac, an iMac, and it's worth $3,000. And you're going to get an iMac and a box of chocolates. Which one do you want? And 500 hands go up for the box of chocolates. Now, think about it for a second. The box of chocolates is going to be $3 or $4 or $5 or $10. Mm-hmm. You're buying a $3,000 product.
Yeah.
What if I take away the box of chocolates?
Right. Then it's, do I buy the iMac or not?
I'm not going to buy the iMac from you. I'll go next door and buy the iMac from the guy because I want the box of chocolates. You said you box of chocolates. I want your box of chocolates.
Right.
So you want to move them to the next step. There is yes and yes on our website if you search for at Psychotactics. Again, if you want something, I can send it to you as part of this.
Usually what I've seen on your website is you have usually two options. One of them is like $5 more, $10 more, something like that. And it includes a lot more. Like, I can't imagine anyone, now that I've got you, does anyone ever choose the lower option? Because it doesn't.
Yes, 1% of the audience does.
Really? Okay. it just doesn't make any sense to me. But I bet, if you just had, I'm going to make two assumptions. First, more people probably read the details in the grid when there's two, right? Versus just having
one. Yes, correct.
And secondly, it becomes that, do I pay Sean 110 or 120 versus if it was just a 120 option, do I pay 120 or don't I pay 120?
Right.
That's the position you want to be in.
But here's the most important thing. The most important thing is that the bonus, when I write a page, I'm thinking, what can I give them that if we took away the product and we only had this bonus, they would buy the bonus. So it is that critical. It is like giving a kid an ice cream cone and then taking it away. So it is the most critical thing, as in if you're sitting down to say, I'm going to offer a website service, you're going to say, what is that one component in the website service that is so critical that if people saw it, they would think, I want this and I want this at any cost. And then you're going to unbundle that from your service and put it as the bonus. I don't care if you had it already, take it out. Get it out from the main thing, put it as a bonus. You are shifting the spotlight when you're doing that whole purchase part where you've gone past all the 7 red bags and now you're there at that buying point. Your brain must be just obsessed with the bonus. If it's a bonus that is like, oh yeah, you can get 2 days off or some ridiculous thing, or you have 17 bonuses, it's of no value. This needs to be so mission critical that I will do anything to get it.
So you know, if you're a web designer, you probably don't have a buy now button on your website. Instead, you have like a lead form. How does that concept translate to, I guess, more of like a services company that doesn't have like a transactional product that they offer?
Well, it depends again on the situation. You know, are they getting them to meet with them? Are they doing something else? Are they getting them to a workshop? Are they getting them? What is the next stage is what's critical. Because supposing you're a web designer and you're saying, okay, sign up for, you know, ideally you should get them to be able to read something. And that's what I always get them
like
to
do. Like a report or something or.
Yes. Yeah. And then you make that so critical that they have to read it. Now, there are some people that will use hype and it works extremely well. They'll say, you know, how I got 100,000 customers in 12 months or whatever. And that is hype. And when you read the document, you will find that there is no information at all about those 100,000 customers or the steps that they took, and there's some rubbish in between.
But now they have an email address they can harp on.
Correct. Yeah. And that is fine. It works, you know, and well, if you're happy running that, that's fine. But you can, for instance, we have found a way to double our subscribe rate. Okay. And so if you say, you don't have to build a website, but you can still learn how to double your subscribe rate using your existing website. And now what you've done is you've compelled me to sign up for something.
You're giving them something of value. It's education. Yeah, it's not just a case study.
Yes. And you can do this as, you know, when you set up this meeting, what we will do is we'll spend 20 minutes before the meeting. I'm going to talk to you about how you can double your subscribe rate. Then we will talk about how we're working on your website. And if you choose not to go ahead, that's cool. If you choose to go ahead, that's cool as well. But now the point is that I am more focused on the double the subscribe rate than I am focused on the website itself.
Right, right. And then from there, yeah. And
yes, but now you've established your credibility. Now you're not fighting. See, the problem with most web designers, and I used to be a cartoonist, so I know, you know, you're trying to sell something that is one of a kind, that's used once and not going to be used again. All kinds of problems pop up. So they need to choose you above everybody else. And if you don't have credibility, so supposing you have a book in the market, and now everybody has a book, so that's a problem, but supposing the customer's read the book, like you've read the brain on it. So it's much easier for me to say, you know, this is what I suggest you do and you'll do it. But usually when they contact you, they're just fishing and hoping that you're the right person. So to get that credibility factor, either you have to take them through something, give them something, or bring them to an event where your credibility is established.
Right. And the good news about that is by the time they are ready to talk about an actual project, a lot of sales is convincing, right? Like if you just get a random lead who found you in the, you know, white pages, right? There are a lot of the sales process before you talk about anything transactional. You know, this is what you're getting from me. This is what you're giving to me. A lot of that is the convincing, which, you know, these earlier options, these earlier offers do much of that convincing in a way that's automated, in a way that doesn't require you to show up and talk on the phone. So that when you do talk on the phone, I mean, I've closed six-figure projects because we had so many automated or even event type things that we did that established that credibility, that established that trust. So by the time they were ready to buy, it was just details, timelines,
and
budget.
And you can use the concept of the brain audit again here. You can say, you know, three critical problems that you don't want to have with your future website. And now you're not doing like 20 problems. You're just doing three problems. And you're going like 5 or 7 pages on a single problem. You're really putting in graphics. You're putting in information. You're establishing yourself. You can have one problem. You know, just one problem. But if you're in the mood for writing 20 pages, you do three problems. But once I read that, I go, I haven't even run into a web designer who brings up these issues. Why would I bother with the other guy?
Exactly. This is finally a web designer who's actually attempting to solve my problem versus somebody who is trying to just show off their technical capacity or whatever else.
Exactly.
It's a difference in product, right? I mean, that's ultimately what
it is. It's a credibility. I mean, no one knows what they're buying. So what we're doing is we're buying long before we pay. And we buy into an idea long before we pay for that idea. So all of this process is about buying into the idea. When you go to a website and you read some information, you're buying into the person before you pay. When you meet someone, you go on a date, you're actually buying into them before you actually pay for whatever you're going for. You have to understand that this is a very important part of things, that yes, the sales page is critical, but once we get down to the purchase or buy into stuff, what are they buying into, and how do we establish credibility? That's critical.
Right. So, well, Sean, I just want to thank you again for coming on these last two episodes. The brain audit was such a shift for me. It's one of those turning points of, you know, within my own business that's noticeable, you know, before brain audit sales pages, after brain audit sales pages. So I just want to, again, thank you for coming on. And I highly recommend anyone listening, go to Psychotactics, check out the brain audit, check out everything Sean's done.
We do have something on pricing, by the way. So if people are interested in learning more about that, they can go to psychotactics.com/CB.
CB. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Oh. And you'll get a fancy report on how to price things, why things are priced a certain way. And that would be very useful for freelancers because it's part of a whole series, but it gives you enough information.
Well, Sean, thank you again. And I just want to thank you again for coming on The Business of Freelancing.
I've had a blast. I mean, I've been making notes here as I speak. So.
I can't wait till this is live. It's
I could do this anytime.
Yeah. Well, we should have more frequent powwows. Because I think I think the people that I know who have read the brain audit, most of them are product people in the sense of they're selling ebooks or courses or membership sites or whatever else. But finding the overlap between, or the similarities rather, between selling a more transactional product where customer plugs in the credit card, you deliver a digital download, let's say it's done, you know, you've done your thing, right? Versus something more higher touch, high price, premium, like a $50,000 website project or something. I've been trying to really find a way to bridge the two, because the underlying concepts, the reasons why people buy and don't buy, they're more similar than they are, disjointed, I guess. There's so many overlaps. It's just what I end up, the reason I really wanted to talk to you was so many, you know, the thing I can't stand is all the freelancers who have a website that's literally something vague, like I help build a better web, and then it's their portfolio, which is a bunch of like screenshots and then a contact form, and that's it.
Yes.
And that's so, everywhere.
So they should ask themselves, would I buy from myself?
Right. Exactly.
And the chances are no.
Yeah.
They wouldn't.
And the litmus test I ask them to use is look at your website. How many times are you mentioning you, you know, I, you know, me versus you, you know, the reader. I think that the people who get how to sell understand that it's all about that the client ultimately doesn't care about us. They don't care about me. They don't care about my hobbies. I mean, sure, you can have an about profile or something that includes maybe stuff like that. But a lot of these websites are so focused on them. Like me, 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 me. Here's what I'm good at. Here's about me. Me, 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 right? I mean, it's probably just because a lot of us are, we go into freelancing from having, the only time we've sold ourselves before has been like via a resume or a CV. And, you know, it's, we just carry that into our marketing site and we wonder why it doesn't work.
Yep.
So, all right, Sean, I'm going to need to run, but I just want to thank you. Thanks again.
You're welcome. And it's been a pleasure.
All right, that wraps up another episode of the podcast. I know I sound like a broken record, but if you haven't yet left a review on iTunes, please head on over there, type in my name, Brennan Dunn, type in the business of freelancing. Please leave a rating and review. This is honestly, I check daily. I'm always seeing, is there a new review? Because that's what, I mean, it motivates me because it's kind of like I'm talking into my microphone right now. I don't get the kind of stats I get when I write a blog post. So that's my way of seeing, you know, are people listening? Am I making an impact in the people that I'm bringing onto the show? Next week, you're really going to want to listen to the next episode. It's with Julia Kelly, and she does probably one of the most interesting and frankly, I don't want to say obscure, but I had no idea that people could apply a lot of the business principles that I cover here on the podcast, that I cover in my courses and everything else, to caricature art, to, you know, the people who do those, you know, when you go to a carnival and people draw you, right? She does this and she's taken that skill, that talent, and applied it to the world of business. And she's charging hundreds an hour for drawing caricatures, which I can tell you right now is a lot more than the artists at the county fair are charging. So stay tuned for this interview with Julia next week.